call a meeting of Planning Commission for Monday, December 9th to order. Could you please call the roll?
Commissioner Christensen?
Present.
Commissioner Demarest?
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen?
Here.
Commissioner Rodman?
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood?
Here.
Commissioner Kettle?
Here.
And Commissioner Jensen?
Here.
Thank you. This time we set aside for citizens' comments. Members of the audience may come up and speak on anything that we do not have on tonight's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to come up and speak tonight? Okay. Next thing is approval of minutes. I didn't see September 30th minutes.
There's a separate pile.
Oh, it's a separate pile.
Yeah, it's hiding. There seems to be another October 14th. I don't know why.
Yeah,
that's the same thing. I found something.
Commissioner Jensen.
On several of these, I'm seeing a difference in just how the commissioners are listed as present. Sometimes Christensen is listed as just commissioner and sometimes as chair or chairman. Should that be more consistent?
Should be.
Yeah.
And then I'll go through each of these. I don't know if there's a preference on the order, but
what are the time?
Okay, well, September 30th, okay.
Yes.
That one, I think, just has the just is listed as commissioner if it should be chairman. I think I'm not seeing any of the other things I've seen on the others. So that's one change, if that's a change.
Commissioner?
Certainly seems as if that's something that could be fixed post vote by the commission.
Yes. Any other comments?
For just September 30th?
September 30th? If not, I'll take a motion. Do we want to do one motion for all of the minutes, or?
I'm separate, I think, yes.
Okay. All right.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of September 30th, 2013, as written, with the one item as to titling, as discussed, corrected after the vote.
Second.
Okay, motion made by Commissioner Demarest to approve September 30 minutes, seconded by Commissioner Jensen, with the suggested changes to the minutes. In discussion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. For October 14th. Commissioner Demarest?
Thank you. On page 1 of 3, the bottom item, or commission discussion summarized below, I just think that's out of place. It really wasn't a part of the workshop A, which were in East Monroe. And the citation there refers to the discussion of school district stuff.
Oh.
I think it's just a matter of where in the document it belongs. Probably with Mr. Yingling's comments on the bottom of page 2 of 3.
Yes.
Could that be in the workshop area or in the citizen comment?
I believe that was a comment before we got into the actual workshop.
Okay.
I think that was an issue being brought back to us from a previous meeting, if I recall correctly.
But regardless, I don't think that it belongs in the recent route.
We'll move that and revise it.
Okay. Commissioner Sherwood?
Yeah, the first paragraph on page three, public hearing for Monday, November 28th, Monday, November 11th, and 5th, November should be December 11th. I just wonder if the date is...
December 11th doesn't work either.
No, I think it was October 28th to November 11th.
Okay, so one of those dates is incorrect, so we just need to get that corrected.
That's right. I also see a little R and take R in the next sentence.
And then rescheduling in the next paragraph is misspelled.
Commissioner Jensen?
Of course, another of the titling on the present part. And then
yes.
At the I count under present 7 people. Under adjournment, that says motion carried 6-0. And there's going to be a number of these counts that are in mismatched on these other minutes.
Paul, we want to correct these and bring these back for this
I'll,
one.
I'll take them as with, if I can, with changes as noted. If that's okay, okay with the commission, then we can.
All right. You can do it that way.
Process them as it is approved after the changes.
Any other changes, commissioners? All right. So I'll take a motion.
I move to approve the October 14th, 2013 minutes as proposed to be corrected.
Okay.
I'll second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood to accept the minutes with changes as stated, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I would note that on the present, we will simply call out each of them as commissioners and not identify the chair or chairman, so we don't identify any officers.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay, 8 minutes for October 21st. Commissioner Sherwood?
Yeah, things to hopefully talk and the second bullet point, manager of Book Health noted that the definition will be added. And maybe we should specify what definition means the senior housing?
Yes, that was senior housing.
Okay, so it is related to that prior sentence.
I will add definition of senior housing to that phrase.
Commissioner Jensen?
Well, then with your change you said on the present, this one would be one of the change backwards to just all commissioners.
Right.
Any other changes? Okay. Motion?
I move to accept the October 21st, 2013 minutes as with changes noted.
Motion made by Commissioner Jensen to approve minutes for October 21st with noted changes. Seconded by Commissioner Rodman. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes for October 28th. Commissioner Sherwood?
I want to check the veracity of the statement on page 2, third bullet point. The use of the not yet adopted 2007 FEMA map for the FEIS and how that may be applied rather than the currently adopted 1991 FEMA map. Total acreage and floodplain would not change using the 1991 map, but there may be additional fill required.
I don't think that's correct,
because the 91 map doesn't show any or very little floodplain encumbrance, whereas the DFIRM, the 2007 map, shows much more extensive floodplain encumbrance on the property. Is that correct?
That is accurate.
So I just, so that we, you know, make that statement correct. Or just to reflect a little bit.
We revise that to reflect that there will be additional, not will not, but will be additional acreage in floodplain, which leads to the statement about acquiring additional fill.
Okay. Commissioner Jensen?
Another one with the present chairman. Then, the first vote there on page 1, the motion carried 4-0 with one abstaining. Yet there were 6 present, so
6
are that up. I think it should be 5-0 because the 6th person was abstaining. And I think that's the one.
Commissioner Gerson.
And I will be abstaining from voting because I was not here that night.
Okay. There's also an approval of minutes for September 9th. Is this motion carried 4-0?
That's what I'm talking about.
Is that the one you were talking
about?
Yeah.
Because there's an abstain, so it should have been.
All right.
The count at the end is correct.
All right. I didn't miss that. Thank you. Okay. Motion?
Is this one changing too much to
no, approve? No, I don't think so.
I move we accept it October 28th with changes.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Rodman to accept the meeting for October 28th with noted changes. Seconded by Commissioner Sterling. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And then the last one we have is for November 18th. Commissioner Jensen?
This one had 2 or 3 of the vote counts. It appears all 7 commissioners are present. And I found on the bottom of page 3, a motion carried 6-0. Middle of page 5. There are 3 instances. Motion carried 6-0. To close the testimony, to break, and to close the public hearing. And then on the back page, there's 1 more. 2 more, actually. 3 more. I missed those 2. So 3 more.
At least it's consistent.
Yeah.
Commissioner Sherwood?
On page 3, the top paragraph, rather they are collected through an interlocal agreement with planning and development. I think that should be with the city. I don't think planning and development can enter into any of these.
That's true. Should be the city.
And then under Katie Woods, she's characterized as being the Monroe School Board Director, but I think Nancy Truitt Pierce is the Monroe School Board
Director. They're all directors. All of them are called directors.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Sure. But they all refer to themselves as directors.
Okay, so that's okay. Okay, thanks.
Commissioner Tuttle?
Thank you. On that note, I think Erin Angus, I don't think her last name is Schaefel, so unless you got that in writing from her, if you're just trying to hear it on the tape, I think her last name is spelled S-N-A-P-K-A. Snapka. S-N-A-P-K-A. I don't know if anybody knows her, but I don't think that's her last name.
You probably had a problem with deciphering or writing. Thank you.
Any other comments, corrections? Motion? Commissioner Shirley?
Yeah. On page 3, third bullet point down toward the bottom. I think that sentence just needs a little. We're changing the discount rate just like county and neighboring municipality versus the cost from changing the discount rate from 25% to 50%. I don't know if that it seems a bit nonsensical, so.
Okay, the discussion had to do with whether to change the discount rate to match other jurisdictions.
Right.
As opposed to keeping the 25% discount. Okay, we'll reword that where it makes a little more sense.
Okay. I think what you're just saying, yeah, let me rephrase that again. We were discussing whether the reason to change would be to match versus the reason to change based on the costs. I think that's kind of what we were trying to say.
Okay.
Okay. Motion?
I move that we approve the November 18, 2013 minutes with the change in the system.
Can you second it?
Motion made by Commissioner Shurtleff to approve November 18 minutes with changes as noted. Seconded by Commissioner Dirksen. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next item on the agenda is workshop comprehensive plan amendment CPA 2013-D zoning code amendment ZCA 2012-09 school mitigation fees. Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have tonight up for recommendation two amendments. We discussed these in the past, but the first is amending the capital facilities element of the comp plan, which basically takes out regulatory language and language that's specific to assessing or the cost of the impact fees. There was one change made to this capital facilities elements on page 3 regarding the adopting or changing the impact fees only concurrently with adoption of school district facilities plans, that they go together. In other words, it doesn't change for a two-year period, but that's that predictability that the commission was looking for.
Right.
That's on page 3, and I did the same did some language in the code amendment. And this is the one that's dated 12-9. And that change is on page 8. It's in red. It was inadvertently left out of your the code amendment that you received in the packet last week. Other than that, the highlighted text in the code amendment are the same thing we talked about in the last meeting, last one or two meetings. And then I did pass out the slide we had from before. I'm afraid I don't have the screen, but the outlay of the district impact fees. There's a couple copies on the table down here too, which outline the impact fees as they are today, and how they may change if we go from 25% to 50%. Now, these are two separate motions, two separate actions. The capital facilities element is pretty straightforward. And it does have findings and conclusions in the staff report, which support the comp plan element. There are no findings and conclusions for the code amendment, because those are not required for, or not typically done at all for these kinds of code amendments related to fees and taxes. Come to find that out. But first, the first item is discussion and action or recommendation on the comp plan element.
Commissioner Nunez?
Thank you. Paul, thank you. I think that this does, that additional language that you referred to on page 3 does help some of that question predictability. As I understand it, this amendment and this direction of this amendment is in front of us because new staff are advising us that it doesn't, the regulatory aspect or type of language that we've had in the capital facilities element doesn't belong there. It's improper. To paraphrase it,
the level of detail and specificity that used to be there, I think, was inappropriate for the comp plan.
Okay. And I can appreciate where you're coming from with that. I don't have anyone else tell me anything different. And so in that respect, I can certainly support the changes that are being proposed at this point. I have no other questions.
Commissioner Sherwood?
A quick question under the conclusion under compliance with the City and Borough Comprehensive Plan. Under conclusion, the proposed capital facilities plan and amendments to the City and Borough Comprehensive Plan are consistent with, should that be called the comp plan, not the capital facilities plan?
Yes, it should be the proposed capital facilities plan. The proposed amendments to the capital facilities plan are consistent with the City of Monroe Comprehensive Plan.
Okay, because that's the title of the section.
Right.
Okay.
I'll revise that. It's a mix of, I think it's a mix of two sentences.
I had one question and curiosity, Paul. On the impact fees, the collection impact fees on the table you have on page 2 of the cover sheet.
Yes.
It shows 2-plus bedroom multifamily homes. There was no impact fees ever collected for those, and I was curious as to why 2-plus bedroom multifamily do not have to pay impact fees.
Well, that's Snohomish School District.
Well, it's Snohomish School. Well, I'm just curious anyway, why there's no impact fees.
I don't know. That's peculiar to Snohomish, because most of all jurisdictions do charge for multifamily and certainly some single family and all types of single family. And of course, in Monroe, as you heard Ralph Yingling tell us, the multifamily are now generating more students than single family than they traditionally have. Where in the past it was always pretty consistent that single family homes generated more school children. But times have changed. Whether that trend is going to continue or whether it's going to reverse back in the direction, you know, we'll know in a couple of years when they update their facilities plan. But Snohomish, you may recall, used to have fairly high impact fees. They've dropped after they issued that pretty large bond issue, several hundred million dollars. So it really took the impact fee income and put it in the form of increased property taxes.
Do we collect, I just don't see two bedroom multifamily in this table from the middle. Is that included in one or the other? And then a duplex townhome?
Same place.
Same thing.
Pardon? We just call it something different in Monroe, but that's the same thing.
Okay, all right. Didn't understand that. Oh,
right. Those are that middle table for Monroe is for duplex townhouses and multifamily, the two bedroom plus. We don't differentiate multifamily from attached single family.
Gotcha.
As opposed to detached single family.
Thank you, Paul. Commissioner Jensen?
Since we're talking about that that very section there, under Monroe, duplex townhouse, two plus bedroom, it shows dollar amounts for 2008, 2010, and the proposed for 2012. The slide that you've been, that have been flashed before us over and over and over has zeros. So now I'm quite confused.
Thus, it's the same, under Snohomish is zero.
No, no, for Monroe.
It's 4884 to 3172.
For 2012. But the slide has zeros up here for the first two lines, but they're not zeros on this table. So has the slide been misleading us?
There have been impact fees for duplex, townhouse, multifamily in the past. Should have caught that missing data sooner, but it's just.
Well, I think we assumed it's zero like these guys, so I didn't question it, but now I see this data here.
And it really follows a opposite trend than the single family. It's going up, not down, in the last couple of years.
So we shouldn't pay any attention to this slide anymore. We should look at this, is that what we're saying?
This year we're going cold.
Hello, Mike.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, any other discussion, commissioners, on that? All right. And we have a motion. Commissioner Sherwood.
I move that we forward a recommendation to the Monroe City Council to approve CPA 2013-D school mitigation fees to adopt the Monroe School District Capital Facilities Plan 2012 to 2017, the Snohomish School District Capital Facilities Plan 2012 to 2017, and the amended text within the capital facilities element of the comprehensive plan as shown in attachments 1 and 2 and based on findings and conclusions here.
You have a second?
One second.
We have a motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, And seconded by Commissioner Dirksen. Any more discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Okay, as to the second part of this.
This has to do with the code amendment, which does set forth the procedure and the process and the impact fees. The refers back to the county methodology. And this code amendment sets forth 1/2 or 50% discount, which is on page... Eight, yes. Last paragraph on page 8. Second sentence, the city's express intent that school impact fee be 1/2 of the amount calculated by each school district, et cetera, et cetera. That's one point I wanted to raise in this. The other highlighted sections are some of the recent changes from the last meeting or two, and we also added some language about the predictability factor and limiting changes to concur with school district plan approvals. Now we've had a lot of discussion about that discount rate in the past. This motion is set up to recommend adopting the amendments to MMC 2007 as shown in attachments 3 to 4. If the commission decides you want to differ from the 50%, depending on what the first motion is, if there's going to be a difference, just to let you know that there would need to be a motion that would approve it, something like further amending the discount rate to whatever, 25%. Section 20.07090. Your pleasure.
Would it also need to include 20.07100 because this schedule is based off of that?
Yes.
Commissioner Demers?
Thank you. Before we go to the discussion on discount, Paul, can we look at page 10, please? And I know you worked hard on this whole issue of the exceptions, or exemptions, rather. But looking at C, the highlighted section there, can you elaborate for me as to the difference between C1 and C2?
The one is where there is no where it's a remove and replace basically, and what this is really in referring to is in real time or in current time. If I come in with an application to replace and not add an additional dwelling unit, that is exempted. And the second, we had some discussion about the 5-year clause, and this is actually pulled right from the transportation impact fee code. But where the replacement is of a home that was demolished some time ago, say over 5 years ago, then that application would be assessed in school impact.
But doesn't one kind of fall into two anyway?
It may. Not in every case, though, I don't think. I think it's sometimes it's better to say too much than not enough.
Okay. If you feel that there's a need for it, just I didn't see the need for it.
Unless that first one was revised to say to remove and replace. But
well, the title of that section talks about that. In C, rebuilding or replacement of the following.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Commissioner Demers, Paul, where in 2 it says an existing legally established dwelling where such replacement occurs within 5 years, which would be, if it was replaced immediately, that's within 5 years. I agree. Number 1 is kind of redundant. Commissioner Jensen?
I actually kind of feel the opposite. It feels like without 2, we're sort of, I guess we haven't said any sort of time factor.
I think we need 2.
Right, and I think that's what 2 is giving.
I think we need that. Yes.
So I see there's a value in having both of these statements. Or unless you're thinking they should somehow be combined into 1.
I think 2 says 1 already.
If you didn't have 1, is it possible someone could then say, well, it's being replaced, and while I'm at it, I'm adding a second unit. But since if we didn't have 1, we don't have anything that says that's now, you know, it's like, oh, well, you just had to replace it, and you happen to make it bigger, and you get away with it. You know, it's exempt. So I think you need 1 to say it's got to be the same number of dwellings, and 2 says it's got to be within 5 years.
Number 2 says destruction of the existing, demolition or destruction of the existing structure.
Legally established. So if you're going from 1 to 2.
Is it not legally insane?
Well, the 2 wasn't there, so it couldn't have been legally established.
Right.
It's a former legally established. Okay, she's not existing in that sense.
Oh, I see. What you're saying. So you're saying 1 is done in part, not
it's,
really
2. It's a little tricky. The language is a little tricky.
Yeah. Well, maybe it just needs to be.
But at this stage, I would err on the side of abundance of caution to qualify it both ways.
Might save us some lawyer fees in the future.
All right, it's not a make or break for me. It just didn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Commissioner Shirley?
Perhaps. After replacement under number 2. Where such replacement does not result in an increase in the number of units and occurs within 5 years of demolition or destruction. And then we say both in one sentence. Possibly. Does that convey something that's satisfactory?
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah, I agree.
So that becomes number 1, and then number 2 is number 3 is number 2. You okay with that, Paul?
Yes. I can do that. Where such replacement where no additional dwelling unit is created, and such replacement occurs, right? Just basically combine them into 1. But are we just creating the redundancy in 1 paragraph instead of 2?
It feels less so because you haven't repeated the existing legally established.
Honestly, it would be easier to go forth with what we have, because otherwise we have to change, amended for council and so forth. And if it's not a significant change, why we're just moving ahead.
Okay.
Well, I think it's a good idea.
Commissioner Demarest?
I do have one further suggestion on that, Bill Paul. What if we were to say instead of rebuilding and replacement of the following activities that was uses, because really a house is not an activity, I don't think. It's a use.
Well, the act of replacement, I guess you could say, is an activity. Strictly speaking.
Yeah. That's fine. Thank you.
Commissioner Demarest?
Paul, I do appreciate your efforts in the area of predictability. Looking at 20.07.090, adding the language that ties back to that element of the comprehensive plan, the capital facilities element. It helps with some of the concern that I had there that we talked about in previous weeks. So thank you for that.
Commissioner Demers?
So it seems like it's time to talk about the discount rate. Yes.
Commissioner Shirley, did you have a...
Luckily.
Okay.
We've had a lot of discussion on 25 versus 50. We've heard testimony, I think compelling testimony from the school district and its representatives to leave the discount as it's been. We've heard testimony from the builder community. I know that we received a letter from Master Builders, and we heard from Mr. Anna Blaine last year, a builder who has built in Snohomish County, arguing against that number, against the 25%. But in my mind, the way that argument has been on the side of the school district and keeping the discount where it's been, is it the perfect answer to the challenges the school district faces with regard to their cap facilities? No, it's not at all. This city needs to pass a levy, pass a bond. But until they do, this school district here has to be able to grow. And it seems that I cannot think of very many times over 21 years when this city had lots to sell but the builders didn't come and buy and build it and pay the school mitigation fees once they were part of the process. Certainly in the last 2 years, with things picking up again after the times that we've gone through, the lots that are out there being created are being built on. And it doesn't seem that the school mitigation fee at a 25% discount is stopping them. I'm going to go in against the 25%. I think we should be saying, I'm sorry, we should be staying with the 25%, not going to the 50% discount. I think, again, the argument's been compelling on the side of doing what we can to help the school districts, recognizing that schools are a really big part of people's decisions to move to the city, to a district. So those are my thoughts on the discount amount. If this stands as it is, if a motion goes forward to change the discount from 25 to 50, I'll be voting against it. Thank you.
Commissioner Shirley.
There's been a little bit of a misdirection throughout this entire process. The developers don't pay this fee. The home buyers pay this fee. I just want to clarify that. The developer doesn't come and say, oh, okay, I'll absorb that out of my profit. I think we're taking a squirt gun to a raging fire here. We are potentially building another portable and another portable, which if the levy does pass, will get torn down or removed within 12 months, 18 months, 24 months. I think that's nonsensical. I think in a way, this reminds me of sort of a rehab situation where we are enabling the school district to continue to do these bits and pieces. I think if I was looking at school districts as far as where I was going to locate my family, we're going to have a couple beautiful new portables out here anytime as soon as we get enough fees, rather than a comprehensive school facility which would result from infusion from a levy. And so I believe that the time has come to not only draw a line in the sand in regards to these impact fees, but we have to start somewhere, and that progressively as they come before us in for other reasons, whether it's the park fee, sewer and water fees, etc., I believe we need to start here. So I'll be voting for this as written.
Richard Jensen?
A couple of points. You mentioned that you don't like seeing a portable get built that 1 or 2 years later might get torn down. We do know that if the school district, if they started today wanting to build a new school to accommodate future growth, it would be 5 or 6 or 7 years before the doors open. Yet the growth is still coming in. So by design, they're going to need something temporary, even if it's only there for a year or two. So I don't feel comfortable crimping on that, just even because it's temporary.
My second point I wanted to mention was, I'm looking back as we're doing all these minutes at the public hearing, and I kind of compare this public hearing to the ones for the East Monroe. East Monroe public hearing, we have the owner, or the, if you want to call them, developer for that matter, here partly pushing what they're seeking. We have not had any builder or future home buyer here in public testimony asking us to make this change. Nobody is asking us to make this change. We might hear developers talk about, oh, it's too high, it's whatnot, but they haven't actually come here and made the request themselves. Whether it's
the representative from the master builders is right over there.
So we have one today.
She's been here.
But I don't see any comments here of, you know, supporting this change in the public hearing.
Excuse me. Commissioner Jensen, last year when we went through this and we had a public hearing last year on this, the same, we did have
testimony. I was not obviously present for that. What I've been present to in the public hearing I've been present to certainly didn't feel like there was a driving force for this.
I just wanted to correct.
Okay, I understand. So I'll amend my comment to say that what I've seen and what I've been participating in has not presented to me anybody in favor of this. What I've been presented with has all been against it, from my perspective. Based on that, I'm not seeing a compelling reason to be making a change at this point. Whether it's the developer that pays the fee or the eventual home buyer, there doesn't seem to be anybody being held back on what is essentially a $5 a month increase in their monthly payments to pay this fee. So I will not be supporting a change in the fee if this is what goes forward.
Okay, thank you. Paul, did you have
a question? I just wanted to remind the commission that we did receive, for the record, two letters from the Master Builders Association that did express their opposition to the 25% discount.
Commissioners? Commissioner Dirksen?
Well, you know, as I've sat and listened and I've looked over these papers and stuff, I can see your point where we do have to have portables there until a plan is in place. My question is, okay, we have all these portables. They've been there for how many years? Where's the plan? There is no plan. And there probably won't be as long as they can get money to create another portable. They say that they can't get people to support, you know, the money, you know, to do a bond. Well, it seems to me that if the parents in this town don't mind that there's these portables, you know, there's kind of conflicting here. You know, we've been told that they don't have any money to do their repairs. Well, these funds can't be used for that anyway, and they need bond issues for that. Is that correct? Am I correct in that? To do repairs or to actual do building, you have to have those. I think that if we continue to give them the bigger dollar amounts, there's no incentive for them to even get a plan together and to do some things that the town really does need to have done, because they use, like the school board said, their capital facilities plan is 100%. This is what they use, and that's not what it's designed for. It's supposed to be a small part of what they're doing, and I think we enable them to continue to do that and not make changes. And so I'm in favor of changing it to the 50%, and maybe the people in the town and the people that need to be involved will get going and get a good plan together that they could pass a bond issue for and to get the new schools built instead of doing this band-aid patch that they've been doing for years.
Commissioner Tuttle?
Thank you. Like I said before, I've been doing a lot of reading and research on this subject, and I do think that the term discount is misleading, and when the formula was established, there was a variable set aside for past and future taxes to be collected, and that's why there was a 50% discount established in the beginning, and it was a 50%. This city changed it to 25%. The mitigation fees were not intended to make up for a shortfall of finances. They're supposed to mitigate the impact of new development, and it should not be the only thing that the district is relying on for their capital facilities budget. I feel like it's improperly being used right now, and I think we should go back to the 50%, and I'll be in favor of that when the vote comes around here.
Thank you. Commissioner Rada?
Yes, I was on the first vote with this, and I was the only vote to have the 50% in the beginning out of the whole council. So you know how I'm going to vote.
Commissioner Demarest?
Thank you. Just a brief comment. I don't have kids. I don't need to worry about whether they're in overcrowded classrooms or not. I went to portables. I was in portables as a kid myself. And I'd rather, as a child, have been in portables, or as a parent, have kids in portables than have them in overcrowded classrooms. And every comment that's being made up here is correct. The school district needs to do more, perhaps. The voters need to do more in supporting this. But in the meantime, there does need to be some sort of band-aid, because these kids are coming into the district, and the space is not there to handle. So like it or not, I think that everything that the city can do to help support this district in providing the best educational opportunity and particularly the environment as they can is important. The mitigation fees are used for capital facilities. They're used to provide space for new students. They're not used for maintenance. They're not used for operations. Those funds come from other places. School district has made efforts in this area. They floated a levy or bond a few years back. It didn't get supported. Hopefully next time that comes up, it will get supported. And as a result of that, we will then see the need for the mitigation fees go away, as we've seen in snow, which will at least be significantly reduced. But in the meantime, we've got to deal with more kids in the schools that we have, and how can we best do that? So, thank you.
Thank you. My comment is as I listen to the people that come and are standing up for the schools and wanting to keep that 25% discount rate, I listen to them and they have a really good argument. And I made a comment last week at the public hearing that the one gentleman gave such a good speech that I thought he would be a good person to go up and fight for getting a bond through in this city. So I think as long as we continue to provide the discount rate at 25%, maybe they won't have the fight in them to go and fight for a school bond. If they do have the fight in them, then maybe this is just a little bit of a pinprick to get them in that motion. So I will be supporting the 50% discount rate. Commissioner Jensen.
It's interesting you mentioned using this change from 25 to 50%, almost as if trying to, I don't know if I'd want to use the word punish or just leverage the public into supporting a future bond issue. But the side effect is, if with such a change, even if the public does support, if it convinces the public to support a bond issue in the future, everyone in the city is now saddled with the additional costs that we're giving back to the developer, and if it leads to the new home buyer or not. But now everybody in the city will be saddled with that additional burden. That I don't agree with doing that to the citizens of the city.
My argument to that would be, Commissioner Jensen, is that the better the schools are in my district, the better off I am as far as my property values also. So it's all comes together. So if the schools if they can come up with a good, you know, bond drive and get the people in the city of Monroe to go ahead and provide that bond money, then I think the schools will be a lot better off. The people of the city will have to pay more in their taxes, but the property is going to increase in value with the better schools. So I think it all comes together in a good way. Commissioner Demers.
Paul, based on your experience, and I know you're not from the school district, but if the city of Monroe citizens passed a levy in November 2014, our next general election, how long would it take before we saw a new school opened? Best guess?
2-3 years.
After the levy was passed, so 2017?
Time for land acquisition, necessary design, bidding, construction, a couple of years.
So perhaps 2016, if we're really optimistic, 2017 or so?
Most likely, yes.
It's a long time. We've got how many lots just done in the process right now in the town? Somewhere around 200?
And those are already paying the impact fees of 25%. Is that correct?
Are they vested as of the date of plat approval with what was present on the books at that time, or would this apply to them? Would a new fee apply to those lots?
The ones that are being developed right now.
The impact fees are assessed at the time of building permit. So far we've had impact fees assessed against Roseland Estates up here just north of Main Street and in Carriage Place. I think we're the only two subdivisions that have actually gotten to home building. The others would be assessed, you know, it's going to be some time before the building permit. They would be assessed to whatever is adopted in this process.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Rado?
Yeah, it isn't that we're going to chop them off completely. It's just going to be able to do a less amount of money. We're still going to be collecting funds for them, but we'll be the only one in the, if we stay at 25, we'll be the only one in the whole county that is at 29. I think we should be consistent with the rest of the county. All the rest of the school districts are getting by around with.
Commissioner Jensen?
Just wanted to mention that Commissioner Demarest gave an example of the soonest possible a new school would happen. I believe the school in the district is going to be needing to deal with some technology levies and other maintenance levies here in the next year, so it's not likely they're going to try to put a bond at the same time, so any bond's going to probably be a good couple of years out at the soonest, and then if it passes, start the clock to a new school. So we're probably, as I was saying, probably in 5, 6, 7 years out before we actually see a new school.
Okay, any other discussion? Okay, Commissioner Sherwood.
In the recommended action, Paul, I just want to make sure. It says, as shown in attachments 3 and 4. And attachment 4 is the zoning code amendment. And I don't see an attachment. I just want to make sure that this is worded correctly. And that we're referring to the correct attachments.
I think 3 was the red line version.
I think that's right. I'm trying to retrieve my cover sheet here.
It's on the very cover sheet.
I don't think I have a copy of that. Everything I have is
on the front of here. It has what the attachments are. Okay.
That's right. 3 and 4 are the red line, and
so they're just two versions.
And yeah, clear text versions of the same code. And they should be consistent.
The red line version is dated through 12-6, and the clean text version is dated through 12-9, to be a little bit more specific.
Commissioner Sherwood?
I move that we forward recommendations from Monroe City Council to approve ZCA 2012-09, adopting amendments to Monroe Municipal Code 20.07, as shown in attachments 3 and 4.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood to send recommendation to Monroe City Council to approve ZCA 2012-09, adopting amendments to MMC 20.07, as shown in amendments in attachments 3 and 4, seconded by Commissioner Tuttle. Any discussion?
Discussion? I'd like to offer a friendly amendment to that. Attachments 3 and 4 don't say the same thing. 4 is superseded 3. I don't think we want the motion to include both of those attachments. I would like the motion just to say attachment 4.
I think that's okay. I don't think that'd be appropriate.
3 did not have the language in it, but 4 has an emphasis.
Okay.
Agreed. Shall I restate?
I look at it a little bit different. It's showing in attachments 3 and 4. So if 4 has it and 3 doesn't, doesn't mean 3 has to match 4. That's the way I see it.
Well, we're not going to be passing attachment 3 up to council, are we, Paul? There's one document that's up to council.
No, it would be the ordinance with council would include the, I want to say it would include the clean version of the code amendment.
Which is attachment 4.
Which is 4. I don't know that it would include the red line version.
Because the red line version
ways.
Number 3 is incomplete. It's been modified.
It may be simple to just simply refer to attachment 4, which is the clean final copy.
Okay.
And we'll do the same with text amendments when we come to that.
I would like to amend my motion then.
Okay, you amend your motion?
I would amend my motion to forward recommendations to the Monroe City Council to approve ZCA 2012-09, adopting amendments to Monroe Municipal Code 20.07, as shown in attachment 4.
Thank you.
Yes, sure. Okay.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Tuttle. Any more discussion? Commissioner Tuttle.
I just want to say that our job is to decide the appropriate amount of mitigation fees, and the intention here is not to take money away from the schools. It's also not our job to solve the district's budgetary problems. So that's why I voted the way I did. I fully support the Monroe Public School District, and we'll have to see what happens now.
Thank you. Any other discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay or aye, whatever.
Nay. Okay, we have, but, 5, 4, 2 against. All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Sherwood.
I believe we had discussed naming specifically who voted for and who voted against. Should we make that?
Should we do a roll call?
Just write that in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Who voted for and against?
Commissioners.
Do it one more time.
Commissioners Demarest and Jensen voted against the motion.
Right.
We'll reflect that in the minutes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Sherwood. Next on the agenda is the Comprehensive Plan Amendment, CPA 2013-8, text amendments.
Okay, we have our final discussion and recommendation for these comp plan elements. As you recall, it started out as a light update to get better prepared for the 2015 comp plan update, which evolved, this is of course evolved into a, more of a rewrite than an update. But a couple of things I want to point out. Again, some recent changes are in the yellow highlight, and some of those highlights go back two or three meetings. Things like the last meeting, Commissioner Demarest pointed out some discrepancies in how some of the data is being presented in land use on pages 30, 31, 32 regarding capacity, land capacity, and number of units resulting from those capacity projections. I did have a meeting over at Snohomish County with the staff there to work this out. It's going to be a little difficult to explain. What it is it's a great example of the problems of dealing with different sets of data or tables of statistics that are based on different data. In this case, there's some differences in terms of what city limits were used for some of the projections and the size of the UGA in some projections. What it comes down to is that there is some apparently conflicting information between, say, page 30 and LU3, and the number of units in the added population, and eventually getting to LU6, table LU6 on page 32, which shows basically a shortfall for about 1,800 persons. So the projections for 2025, the basic issue is that 2025 populations are higher than projected with the new population forecast for 2035. There's been obviously been quite a drop off in growth since the recession started up a few years ago. So there is some internal conflict in balancing one set of data with another. And so technically, right now, based on the 2025 population projection, we do have a shortfall. In reality, if the 2035 projections come out as proposed right now through Snohomish County, we will, there's some text about significantly reducing that deficiency, and we really won't be very far off in terms of capacity versus number of people to accommodate. Now, my personal opinion is that that 2035 projection is going to be seen to be short. There's going to be another bill of lands report in 5 years. I think at that point we're going to see that the population for Monroe is growing more quickly than anticipated due to a number of things, including the 522 improvements. But that's yet to be borne out. But for now, there do seem to be some conflicts here, but as I said, basically, in terms of what are now seem to be erroneous projections for 2025, the numbers, the deficiency is correct on that basis. It's a problem of mixing capacity with two different population projections and not using the 2035. We're trying to hold to the 2025 standards for all of this all along so that we don't start trying to mix and get beyond ourselves. The good part is that this will be resolved much better in the 2015 update when we're using 2035 as the target dates for all of the growth projections. So we'll have to bear with some uncertainty for the next year and a half.
Commissioner Demarest?
Is there any real significance of that uncertainty for the next 2 years?
I don't think so.
Doesn't really matter, does it?
I don't think so. we're having quite a spike in growth right now, and it does look like it's going to tail off very much. We have still having a lot of interest in development. But I don't see it as a real issue in the next year and a half. We've had some other problems with trying to, and the housing element was revised on page 12 to reflect some of that same language about the difference between 25 and 35 populations. But I'm putting a lot more faith in the update process that's going to bring these things together. But it's difficult for me to explain it. At the time, with the county staff, it made sense. But they had to explain it two or three times for me to figure it out. Okay, I got it. But it's very difficult to carry that message. It's very complicated. Now I've tried to qualify with that language about future capacity may be significantly changed in terms of much less deficiency. It remains to be seen how the population is going to grow when we come out with new projections. Hope that made at least a little bit of sense.
Commissioner Shirley?
Well, I think we spent a lot of time on these things. We've gone through pretty thoroughly, and I don't see any blatant jeopardizations of planning for the next 18 months in what is before us. It's better than it was, and it's reflected a lot of care and concern on our parts and input. So I think we're ready to move on this.
I agree. Commissioner Jensen?
I just had one question on LU 36, the last paragraph. It talks about how many acres of commercial zone land and industrial zone land. Are those two numbers, the 57.7 acres, actually particularly the commercial, is the 57.7 acres inclusive or not inclusive of what may happen with East Monroe?
That is, that's currently zoned commercial land.
So okay,
out of this does not include East Monroe.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Commissioner Demarest?
I'd just like to echo Commissioner Sherwood's comments. Paul, I think it's a much better document than it was when we started out with. It may have been a bigger task and project than what was anticipated, but I think clearly it needed to be done. And it's good that it's done rather than just waiting for another year and a half or more to go by to get it done later. So thank you for your efforts.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. Thank you to all staff for your efforts. Commissioner Sherman?
I'd like to make a motion to forward recommendations from the Monroe City Council to approve CPA 2013-8 text amendments amending the natural environment, land use, housing, and economic development elements of the comprehensive plan as shown in attachments 1 through 8 and based on the findings and conclusions herein.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Rodman.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
We want to be consistent with the last and qualify the attachments. It would be attachments 2, 3, 5, 7, 8.
Okay. Attachments.
Buttons of caution.
I would like to amend my motion to forward a recommendation to the Monroe City Council to approve CPA 2013-8 text amendments amending the natural environment, land use, housing and economic development, so the comprehensive plan, as shown in attachments 2, 3, 5, 7, and 8, and based on the findings and conclusions herein.
Okay, motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Rodland, to forward recommendation to City Council on CPA 2015-8, text amendment. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
That's okay. A question.
Commissioner Jensen.
We did not make that distinction on our very first motion of the comprehensive plan capital facilities. We said append attachments 1 and 2, and of course 1 was the red line text. The very first motion we did at the very start. First.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I believe it was 1 and 2, but
he just read all this here. So
those
are they identical?
Both identical. The only change that been made to that element for the last couple months was the one I added just recently.
Which
was added to both. So I think we're okay.
Okay.
Right.
Mr. Chairman.
I think before we go to the next one, you wanted to have a break.
Yeah, I sincerely apologize for the late delivery of the findings and conclusions on the East Monroe land use and on the rezoning. But it might be a good idea to give the commission some time to go through that before we start some discussion. Again, my apologies for the absolute late delivery.
Not a problem. Okay. So we'll take a break and let the commissioners read the exhibit three and attachment 4.
I might just add a couple comments. The findings and conclusions for the comp plan amendment are fairly extensive. The zoning findings and conclusions are fairly minimal. They're basically just draw up the minimal requirements from state law. But the findings and conclusions for the land use do also speak in a lot of ways toward the rezoning.
Okay. How much time do you think we need, commissioners?
At least 15 minutes.
All right, let's take 15 minutes then. And
anyone else? Is that okay with me?
That's okay with me.
Yeah.
Take 15 minutes to read this, and then we'll start back again. Okay, thank you. All right, the next item on the agenda is item C of the workshop, comprehensive plan amendment CPA 2011-01 and rezone 2012-01 East Monroe Development Group. Paul, you want to?
Yes. Let me begin by informing you, at least some of you know, that the hearing examiner rendered his decision on the appeal of the final EIS and ruled in favor of the city, found the EIS to be complete and adequate and solid. We are in the midst of a reconsideration period of 10 working days where the appellant, two neighbors, can file a request for reconsideration for the hearing examiner to reconsider his decision. That the date for filing that is Monday, December 16th at 5 o'clock. Council is scheduled to take action on a first reading tomorrow night and a second reading on the 17th. That may hinge on a pending, if a reconsideration request is submitted, council's next action would hinge on pending a decision from the hearing examiner on the reconsideration. Frankly, I don't know that there'd be any basis for reconsidering anything since he pretty much came out 100% with the FEIS as it stands. So the last item is about the update, and it's going to be short. Like the school item, this is two motions, two different actions. The first for the comp plan amendment, and the second for the rezoning. They have to fall in that kind of sequence. The findings and conclusions, as I mentioned, the findings and conclusions for the comp plan are fairly extensive. Basically touch on, four areas, compliance with the plan amendment procedures, and there's, of course, as you go through it, there are several specific criteria that have to be addressed, and the responses to those criteria, first being the different parts of the amendment procedures, which goes all the way through pages aren't numbered. Quite a way. B, the second criteria is meeting the following criteria, things like addressing the needs of the city, compatible with neighborhood land uses, consistent with land use and growth projections, consistent with other elements, and the last one being compliance with Monroe Municipal Code, the SEPA chapter. Now, I know this is quite a lot of information to spring in you at this late hour, but what this sets up is basically an analysis of the comp plan and basically setting out how the amendment is supported by the comp plan that we are, and including some of the text amendments that we're in the midst of, or that you just recommended on your last motion. And with that, we've had quite a lot of discussion about this, but with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
We have to address any questions.
Well, first off, a clarification on that decision of the hearing examiner. I saw the reconsideration in there when I read it, but he also talked about a judicial appeal, and I thought you had told me that the EIS was not an option, or judicial appeal was not an option for that, that it would have to wait till the amendment was acted on and then would be taken to the growth hearing board if someone wanted to challenge it.
That's right. I think the language in the hearing examiner decision maybe didn't have quite all the information, but once if a reconsideration is requested and the decision made for or against the reconsideration, the only next appeal for the appellant, let's say the hearing examiner declines to reconsider, the next step is council's final action on second reading. Once that's adopted and once that ordinance becomes effective, or I'm sorry, once it's published, which would be, I think, December 24th, from that day on, there's a 60-day appeal period to appeal to the Growth Management Hearings Board. That is the next appeal. The FEIS cannot be further appealed.
Okay, so it's just incorrect.
It has to be coupled with the amendment action on the ordinance, on the land use ordinance. Right? Okay. They can't go separately. They're married at this point.
Thank you.
Commissioner Rodlin?
I have a couple of questions, maybe not important, but it says incompatible uses of this property. Our zoning, business zoning, we have restrictions on, we used to have, I'm not sure what it is now, on what kind of X-rated businesses could go in areas where there's no schools and houses and so forth. And is that going to be covered under this?
The X-rated for adult entertainment?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some time ago, the city enacted a adult entertainment regulations, and within the Freiland Industrial Park, within the interior, there's an area that's designated as a...
That's the only place
that can put it. AE slash SOB zone, adult entertainment slash sexually oriented business overlay zone. That's the only area where such a business would be permitted. And there, all those businesses are different kinds are defined in our code.
Okay. Then on the final conclusions here, I was looking through there. I didn't see anything that says, maybe it doesn't have to be in the final conclusions, about the infrastructure for the sewer water, all at the city. You have to be responsible for that. I didn't see it in there, and I suppose it should be.
That's, I don't know if that's not something that directly impacts findings. That's, if that were an issue, that would be something that would more come out in the development application or the time of development review. But the developer, no differently in this case than any other case, is responsible for extending utilities to the property as required.
Should be in there about that. We discussed that very heavy.
We did.
That's it. Commissioner Johnson?
I think maybe there might be something that you're about that at a page, sort of page 7, I think, under section 1 there, urban growth. Encourage development in urban areas where adequate public facilities and services exist or can be provided in an efficient manner. And what I read below doesn't seem to answer that, because we frequently, us and public community comments, were questioning what it would cost to run facilities and power and sewer out there. And I don't see anything here that would explain a finding or a conclusion about how it could be done in an efficient manner in that location.
Well, we've talked before about the economic feasibility and inherent costs in site development, including utility extensions. And the economics, and actually the economic feasibility, is not a factor at all that we consider in the EIS or in the amendment process. In terms of efficiency, well, can the utilities be efficiently extended? The utilities are available, and there is means of extending. A measure of efficiency is, you know, that's open to interpretation. That's as to how you define efficiency, and efficiency is not clearly defined. But if this were a case where utilities would have to be extended a great distance, and it's going to affect the capacity of the treatment plant or the water capacity, then I think we're talking about something that is not efficient or could not be supported in that sense.
Thank you. Paul, this is I've been here a long time, I've heard, and this is probably one of the longest findings and conclusions I've ever seen. It's a long document, and it's an awful lot, I think, for us to absorb in 15 minutes and act on. I appreciate the pressure you've been under trying to get things done, but I think that it just says something about the process. I do have a few comments and questions in here. I'd like to go through page by page and see if you can help me out a bit. And maybe to facilitate that discussion, I suspect others may have some questions or comments on various pages. I'm certainly willing to share my time to just take each page, so we're not going back time and time again, if that would help the process a bit. For starters, on the first page, and recognizing we don't have page numbers, I'm just going to call them as they come. Page 1, you state, or the city states, that overall the city concludes that the benefits of commercial development along the US 2 traffic corridor will positively impact the rural community. Can you expound on that a little bit for me?
Depends on how you how you positively impact. In this case, I think it's being interpreted in terms of added revenue to the city, added employment, expanding the commercial base, bringing in other potential commercial uses to supplement what we have now. This is one of those items that can be interpreted in different ways depending on how you weigh in terms of weight the how you judge this particular amendment. But we do have a very finite number of commercial acres on Highway 2, which is, I think, part of the, I don't know that that's specifically detailed in here, but that's part of what drives this. But in terms of benefits, that Walmart could be argued the same way, that it's certainly going to benefit the community, but that may impact other existing businesses. Well, this is a little different, much different. Actually, classification being 10 or 11 acres, there's going to be limit as to what can be developed there. But I think whatever it is can be seen as a addition to what we have for our commercial base. And I still want to deal with the concept of gateway out there. And it is going to begin, in some sense, at the edge of the city, and this is going to be the outlying edge. It's going to be a tentacle to that point. We've had quite a bit of discussion about that as well. I think a lot more will come out with that in the 15 update with a more of an urban design element in that plan.
All right, thank you. I don't have anything else on page one. Are we going to add something more to that? Page two, number three, talks about the history of the property. And you said that it was annexed initially to be commercial. And I don't know that that's come up in any of our discussions along the way. Where did that come from?
That someone else came up with that, and apparently originally, way back, it was annexed with some intention of commercial use. That would have been based on the... Well, this was pre-comprehensive plan. This was way back in 1970. And then it was changed in 1994 to limited open space.
Changed from residential.
From residential. I don't recall when it was changed to residential. I forget what the classification was.
9600.
I think it was ever zoned commercial prior to that.
No, not zoned.
So how much bearing does that history have on this decision today?
Well, that was many, many years ago. And it was when it was zoned residential, and then land use and zoning residential, and it reverted to, or downzoned to limited open space in 94. This is just after the Growth Management Act. That was, what, 1990-ish? Which brings us to today. But then, you know, in many ways, the circumstances have changed that have brought this about. In 2013, it's been going on for, you know, a few years, that changes the complexion of whether that, you know, how that property should be developed. One of the keys that it is in the UGA, and agriculture is not a viable use, and I guess the agriculture use now is marginal at best and infrequent. But this comment in itself probably doesn't have a lot of bearing on this, since it was so long ago. But you know, a lot of things have changed, certainly since 1970 or since the 80s.
So,
okay, the original zoning was RS-9600 residential. I don't know the detail of that history way back then.
Do you do?
Yep. Theo Ray Anderson and Keith Anderson. He was turned down.
What was turned down?
Well, the building out there.
Making it commercial?
Yeah.
Actually, this language was, this the same language in the ordinance as it came forth last year, like last April, when it first came to the commission and the council. And these are likely going to change slightly between now and the council meeting.
Tomorrow night?
I know, for there may be a more finalized version that might have some minor changes to it before the second meeting.
Based on council input?
Based on council input tomorrow night and any added information.
Okay, but I need to look at this as someone's voting on it tonight.
If commission has some points about what they think is questionable or should be expanded on, we can take that to council. Advise and take this.
I guess with regard to number three, one, I don't really see the relevancy if it's 40 years old. And two, Mr. Robbins just said, added further information, says that that request was never accepted. Matter of fact, it was turned down, which to me is saying something different than what the language here is saying.
Good qualifying that. Let's change it.
It says exactly what Wayne says. The landowner's intention was to commercially develop the property. However, it was designated residential.
And I appreciate that.
And the legislative record, as you go back through it, Brad Feilberg is the one that dug it all up, indicates that that is what happened. So, I mean, Brad is didactic. Memory here at City Hall.
Yes, it does.
And perhaps maybe it's just the wording then when it says to me that it was originally annexed with the intent to be commercial. It was annexed certainly on the part of the developer or hope of the owners that it would be commercial. But was it the city's intent to make it commercial? I don't know. Well, there's one of those rhetorical questions. Sorry, Jeff. I don't have anything else on page two.
Commissioner Jensen?
Should we make a motion to go past 9?
Oh, yes. Can we make a motion?
Yes, I move to go past 9 o'clock.
Motion made by Commissioner Jensen to go past 9 o'clock. Second?
I'll second that.
Seconded by Commissioner Demarest. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye. Now is Mr. Sherwood the
decision? Mr. Sherwood opposed going past 9 o'clock.
Okay, I'll just see. Should we note that in the notes?
Yes, do you have a comment on page 2?
Yes.
Commissioner Jensen?
Perhaps lacking any other definition or history of why it was later downzoned to limited open space. I'm turning to the land use element of the comprehensive plan that we just voted to forward on page LU43, in the policy LUP 1.1, paragraph 1B, or A and B, really. It's talking about the definition for policies around limited open space. Mm-hmm. This designation shall provide for residential uses maximum densities. It's appropriate for land that A, lacks the availability of public services and facilities necessary to support urban development, or B, is so severely impacted by critical areas, including frequently flooded areas, steep slopes, or wetlands, that development requires significant mitigation. It goes on to talk about it can be a buffer between development or urban separators between the transitional land uses on the urban growth boundaries of the city, which I believe this is on the boundary. So based on our current land use element, it would seem to suggest what many have already said about the area might be why it was made limited open space.
and lacking any other reason, that seems a very good reason to apply. And it would, you know, that sort of makes me question how does something changed that is no longer, because this definition still fits that bland very well. And I don't see anything here that's describing how this situation has changed.
Well, back in 1994, that, you know, was probably pretty fitting, and it still prevails that it's, as you described, places where utilities or services are not available, severely impacted, requires significant mitigation. In this case, there are a couple different ways to look at it. And I believe circumstances have changed. But the utilities and services are, well, services are available, police, fire, that sort of thing. Utilities are available. They're not at the site, but they are available. The land is, recall the EIS, is severely impacted by critical areas, reducing the developable area to 10 or 11 acres. In fact, the biologists found that the existing critical areas were fairly marginal, and the one of the efforts of the EIS was to approach it on the basis of combining functional use for compensatory flood storage with enhancement of the critical areas to gain over time a higher quality habitat, higher quality critical areas. And so there is, certainly there is mitigation required, but a lot of that I think is addressed by avoiding critical areas, particularly shoreline. So it's a balance of whether this 20 years later still meets the reasons that it was rezoned back in 1994 from limited open space. Then, of course, it brings in the whole issue of private property rights. But part of what pushes us now is that with our limited space within the UGA, the our comp plan used to endorse prime agricultural land within the city limits, which goes directly conflicts with GMA law and requirements policies about preserve, and we changed our comp plan last year to call for preservation of prime farmlands outside the city limits. But part of that is also developing areas within the UGA, appropriate areas for urban densities. In this case, the application now with the circumstances that have changed is the and I think in a large part the EIS addresses some of these potential issues about meeting them and addressing them, which gives it more basis for change. Does that make sense?
Kind of. I know that through, as we get through these other pages, there seem to be many places talking about, like, comparing, oh, there's only one resident per 5 acres, so the impact on future residents is minimal and such. It feels like there should be or should have been in these conclusions something addressing, in this particular case, the impact or, you know, the findings of what, you know, how has the situation changed to justify that it would seem, how is it suggested it doesn't match this definition anymore? Because clearly it did back then, and even back then there were certain less restrictions. You probably could have done a lot more back then, sort of ignored a lot of the critical things more back then than you can now. It seemed like it would be more in the definition of limited open space today than it was in 1994. So I think that's a gap or an omission from these findings.
And part of the LOS is a bit of an oxymoron when you get down into the zoning code. Land use that's prohibited, you know, a fitness club, daycare, cement plant, not a concrete plant, but a, you know, like Portland cement plant. which I think was originally enacted to accommodate Cadman down in the, they're actually limited open space down where we're there with their which is now a concrete patch plan. Then of course that allowed use also fell under the limited open space on the east side of town. You know, it was a zone-wide setup, but there's other kinds of development that would seem out of place with LOS by the time you get to that level.
That's all I have for
interesting. Anything else on page 2? Commissioner Sherwood?
I feel as though I've run 25.75 miles, been kidnapped, placed in a black SUV, and taken back to the start line. I don't understand what we're doing. I just want to make that statement, but I think that I've read through this, and we've been through this, and it's time to take a vote. If I'm overridden on that, then we're going to go through this page by page. That's fine, but I object to that.
I'll be happy to respond to that from my perspective.
Commissioner Jimenez?
I think that it's pretty clear to everyone that I'm going to vote against this. I'll give you that. I have every time it's been in front of me. I think it's bad work for the city to go. My purpose in going through it is to let the record reflect why I'm voting against it. And I think that's an important part of the process. If you want to take that opportunity away, if the majority of the Planning Commission wants to do so, I'll certainly respect that and go along and vote now. But that is my reason for doing this.
Well, then let's take a poll of the Planning Commission and see where we want to continue on this. Personally, I'm going along with Commissioner Sherwood that we have beat this horse until it can't stop anymore. And I don't see by going through this page by page it's going to get us any different conclusion. That's my personal opinion. So let's see how the rest of the commission goes. Commissioner Jensen.
I enjoy the opportunity to look at this at a more closer level by page.
Commissioner Tuttle.
It doesn't really matter to me. If we keep going, there's always going to be some questions, but I feel like most of this stuff, the limited open space, the traffic, the utilities, all that stuff, everybody's not going to agree on it, and we're just continuing to have the same conversation over and over, so we can move on. That's fine.
Commissioner Rodman?
I already go home.
Commissioner Harrison?
I have to say I agree that we have gone over this and over this, and nothing has really changed, and I would, though I appreciate Commissioner Demarest wanting to be very thorough, I think we've already been very thorough with this. And that we need to vote on.
And I think we have a consensus, and it sounds to me.
This is the.
We're really going to take a motion. Commissioner Rodman?
Since this is Dave's last night, I would do whatever the council or commission decided to do. It's I'm glad to see you're still working with us. I wish you'd stay a little longer, but anyway, I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Wayne. I appreciate that very much.
Okay, I guess still from what I hear, it is related to have a motion on this item.
I move that we forward a recommendation to the Monroe City Council to approve CPA 2011-01
East Monroe Economic Development Group amending the comprehensive plan land use designation promoted open space to general commercial as shown on attachment one and based on the findings and conclusions herein.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Dirksen to forward recommendation for CPA 2011-01 East Monroe Economic Development Group amending the comprehensive plan land use designation from limited open space to general commercial. Any more discussion on that?
Thank you. With all due respect to staff, and I know you've worked really hard on this, I think there's an awful lot of fluff in this. I think that if the proposals go forward with the recommendation, it should be able to stand on its own 2 feet without fluff, without embellishment, without, like, what I want to say, overly generous arguments in support. That said, the votes going forward, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Tuttle.
Thank you. Dave, I agree with you. I think there is some fluff in here, and there are some things that are overly generous, which were things that I underlined, but they don't significantly impact my opinion on it either. But I agree, if there are any revisions done, it might be a good idea just to reanalyze some of the statements and make sure they're very factual and not so overtly in favor.
I can tell you that a lot of this is based on legal advice.
Yeah, I'm just saying, that's been an issue for me in a lot of other documents that I've looked at the city over the last 4 years, so I don't really like the fluffiness of some things, but it's not going to change the way I feel about private property rights and the rest of the conclusion, so.
Commissioner Jensen?
Well, we, of course, weren't going to go through this page by page. There's just a couple points that just part of that fluff was points where it talked about encouraging the city should be encouraging infill development for vacant areas and other things like that. I look back to the document again that we just forwarded, the land use document that we just forwarded, and the page that I asked about earlier, it specifically calls out, according to these estimates, there appears to be an adequate supply of land to accommodate projected retail and service industry space requirements over the next 20 years. I want to mention something about Highway 2, which of course has been the counter for that, but in my mind, the fact that there's adequate doesn't seem like now's the time we have to be dealing with adding more, whether it's Highway 2 or otherwise. If there's too much, I think that could actually cause a negative impact to other landowners and their rights to have value retained to their land. So that's my thought. That's just part of my thoughts.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Well, then I'll call for all in favor. Please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
We have two opposed, Commissioner Jensen and Commissioner Demarest opposed.
Okay, the next amendment is for the rezoning of East Monroe from limited open space to general commercial. Now, this is a quasi-judicial action, and before we proceed any further, I have an exercise I need to go through with the commissioner in terms of some questions for appearance of fairness before we move any further. So let me read this to you and have a few questions. Due to the large size of the underlying property proposed for zoning reclassification, it is And Tina, you don't have to write all this down. Due to the large size of the underlying property proposed for zoning reclassification, it is the city's position that this proposal is legislative rather than quasi-judicial in nature. As an aside, comp plan amendments are legislative, not quasi-judicial, because they typically deal with a large area, citywide, or many parcels. Quasi-judicial kicks in when you're dealing with a single piece of property or a single owner on a small piece of land. However, because the consideration of a rezone involves a public hearing and implicates the land use rights of a specific landowner, out of an abundance of caution, the proceeding will be prefaced by quasi-judicial appearance of fairness doctrine procedures. The appearance of fairness doctrine requires that such proceedings be fair, not only in fact, but also in appearance. The legal standard under this doctrine is whether a disinterested person, being appraised of all relevant facts, would be reasonably justified in thinking a particular decision maker's interest or involvement in the case may affect his or her judgment. And I'm not going to ask the commission as a whole a series of questions. The first area is interest. Does any commissioner have a financial interest in the property or underlying property? You can answer in the affirmative if you do to any of these questions. Does any commissioner have a family member who is a party of record? Does any commissioner have a personal or familial employment or other business relationship with a party of record? Does any commissioner own property within 500 feet of the underlying property? Is any last question under this category of interest is any commissioner aware of any other personal interest or involvement with the proposal, the party of record, or the property should fairly be disclosed? Okay, second section deals with input.
The second question, am I party record because I spoke at the hearing? If so, then I am.
Well,
I don't want to disclose.
That was for the DEIS, draft EIS, yes. And you are a party of record in that sense, yes.
In that case, because I spoke at that same hearing.
Okay, so that's fine. And the response I need is that you may be, but here's the situation. Okay, that's fine. Impartiality. Is any commissioner aware of any personal bias for or against any party or for against the proposal? Has any commissioner prejudged any of the issues? Has any commissioner not reviewed the record materials for the proposal? Is final question of this section, is any commissioner aware of any reason why he or she would not be able to perform his or her duties in an objective, impartial, and fair manner? That's all I'm a lawyer doing.
Yeah.
Last section, ex parte communications. Ex parte being conversations, meetings, discussions. Has any commissioner had ex parte communications regarding this proposal while the proposal has been pending? This could be if you're running someone in the grocery store, if one of the neighbors talks to you about the project.
Well, how long has it been pending?
Oh, goodness.
Because, I mean,
since 2011.
And how do you differentiate between this and the comprehensive plan process?
Well, if there was discussion, ex parte discussion specifically related to the rezoning, that's the question, not the comp plan amendment. You can have ex parte communication regarding the land use designation because that's legislative, but you should not have ex parte communication regarding the zoning, since it's considered to be quasi-judicial, different restrictions.
This is to the best of your knowledge, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
All right.
Certainly. Okay. Part of the answer to that question is that if so, the substance of the communication must be formally disclosed, placed in the record, and an opportunity to rebut the substance of the communication must be provided to the parties. So at that, just to be thorough, I want to open the floor for any parties to formally challenge any commissioner. You should emphasize that pursuant to RCW 42.36.080, appearance of fairness challenges are waived unless they are raised promptly when the reason for the alleged disqualification becomes known. So if any of you had raised an issue, and if any member of the audience wishes to challenge that, now is the time. Otherwise, the challenges will be waived. Then there will be an appearance of fairness. Anyone? Okay. Thank you. That concludes that exercise.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
I'm going to repeat this with counsel, too.
Be more interesting.
Okay, I'm trying to remember where I was at here. We have a motion on the floor.
Not for the rezoning.
No motion.
No, we didn't take.
I
started that exercise before we began any discussion.
Okay. Yeah, we were going through the zoning part of it.
Right.
Okay.
I'm prepared to make a motion.
Okay.
I move that we forward a recommendation to the Monroe City Council to approve RZ 2012-01, East Monroe Economic Development Group, amending the zoning designation from limited open space to general commercial as shown on attachment 2, and based on findings and conclusions herein.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Rodlin. Any discussion? Any further discussion? Commissioner Jensen?
Just looking at the same thing with the findings and conclusions here in Section C. Talks about the development changes, including the increases in the city's population, employment, need for development of urban uses within the city's UGA, and specifically calling out commercial development capacity and growth targets, which again I go back to the land use document, which says that we already have sufficient targets. So that would seem to be a conflict there.
I can make one comment about that. The adequacy is, it's kind of a marginal statement. We do have almost 58 acres of commercial ground. Most of that is in the North Kelsey area, a large majority of it. And actually there are projects in the pipeline that may be coming to fruition fairly soon that's going to significantly reduce the amount of land. Quite a bit of that commercial land is scattered in very small parcels throughout the city, throughout the mixed use zone, the downtown area, and so forth. There's an assembly of good, buildable, available land, a fairly large parcel in North Kelsey, but beyond that, other than the northwest corner of Highway 2 and Fryland's, we're shy of that category of commercial ground. But technically, we seen him.
Right.
Okay. FYI.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
The let the record show that Commissioner Jensen and Commissioner Demarest opposed. Brings us to workshop item D, comprehensive plan amendment CPA 2012-C 2015 comprehensive plan update. Paul?
Thank you. This is the last item. I didn't want to bring you tonight. What I brought was a schedule, a projected schedule for this 2015 update. It's been updated just today by the consultant, but it gives you kind of a look at the overall process between now and June of 2015. This update does have to be adopted by council by or before June of 2015, and it is a good year and a half long process. But a couple of points: we are, you might recall, we are using this Mind Mixer web-based program as an interactive program to participate, share ideas, trade information back and forth. That did go live just today. And I meant to bring the link to that website, and we'll send you an email, and we'll get it on the website, a link to that, to begin to check it out. The next thing that's happening of note is that there's this visioning capsule, this community visioning workshop that was originally scheduled for late November. Originally late November, then moved to the first week of December, and now rescheduled to the late part of January, tentatively January 23rd. That is really the first major event in this process. That's going to really kick off the process in a big way. And all the commissioners are members of that Citizens Advisory Committee we talked about before. You'll be on this committee not as commissioners, but as citizens. But certainly you'll carry forth interaction in those meetings to the commission meetings. And we have, I think it's 7 other residents, citizens, business folks that are sitting on that group. So that group will be meeting prior to the community visioning workshop. So give you that to look forward to. That's money. More later.
Thank you, Paul. Commissioners, any discussion on this? All right. Discussion by commissioners and staff.
This being our last meeting of 2013, it's been a year. I do want to thank Dave for your incredible service.
Seconded.
21 years. That's quite an accomplishment. Next year, I don't remember what the date is of our first meeting, but I know one thing that's going to be coming back is the sign code, which we originally intended to deal with this year.
That's good.
It's coming back.
You have to go back. You can't wait
to collect
the sign code.
You're bringing back
as
a consultant.
And we'll be getting deeper and deeper into the 2015 update as we go along. That's going to be the main project that we're going to be dealing with for the next many months. Whatever else comes along. Again, Dave, thank you for your commitments. And thanks to all of you for all your hard work this past year. Together we've, managed to get through quite a lot.
You did. Commissioner Jensen? Commissioner Todd?
Yeah, Dave. Good to have you here. Long you've been here. Only one thing I'm looking forward to is I'll be able to. I think we can get out of here before 9 o'clock.
There you go. Commissioner Dirksen?
Nothing.
I do want to thank Commissioner Demarest for all that work.
Thank you.
It's been greatly appreciated.
Commissioner Demarest?
I do have a couple of words.
Here we go.
Rules of a planning commissioner. Folks, do your homework. Know or get to know the issues. Know your community that you live in, that you're a part of, and that you're here to serve. If you don't know, ask. Tell a commissioner, a staff member, people in the community. And perhaps one of the most important, participate. It leads to others participating, which in turn leads to good discussion and a better process. Vote what you believe. We're all individuals. Planning Commission is its own body, and you are only there, you are there as one of seven members. So while you may not all agree, every opinion is important. Don't be afraid to challenge. Just do it respectfully, whether you're challenging each other, on rare occasions perhaps challenging the public, or challenging staff. Challenge can be productive, and I think it's certainly merited. And last, and I'm going to introduce this one first off with a paraphrase on a definition. And that definition would be, in many cases, it may be intended to start a discussion or at least draw an acknowledgement that the listener understands the intended message. And that would be a rhetorical question. I think they do have a place, and I would encourage you, if you feel the need to ask a rhetorical question or what you see it might be a rhetorical question, ask it. You know, it's been a real privilege to be up here for 21 years. Sally asked me this morning, I think it was last night, how many meetings that is. And I said, well, probably somewhere around 400, which is an awful lot. And I think that when I came on board, well, I know that Jerry Wilson was chairman. Jerry was a high school teacher here in town, and I think he may have served just a little longer than I did. But he was a great chair. And he followed these rules here. He did those rules. And so I would just encourage all of you, take pride in what you're doing, put the effort into it, and contribute to making this a great community. So I thank staff in particular for your patience and support over the years. I know that I've been trying at times. I hope for the betterment of the process or the success of the process, then you're not out of here by 9 o'clock every night. If you are, I don't think you're doing your job. So with that, again, thank you. Jeff, thank you. And maybe I'll come visit once in a while, but don't expect to see too much of me. Thank you.
Yeah, and as chair, and I learned quite a bit from Commissioner Demarest as I sat here through the years that I've been here. I can really say that I appreciate what I have learned just by watching him and by how he ran the meetings and how well he did. And I hope that I can continue to serve as well as Commissioner Demarest has. And I can't say how much I appreciate him being here.
Thank you, Bill. And you're doing a good job in that chair. I hope you keep it for a while.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. With that, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion.
Motion made by Commissioner Demarest to adjourn. Second.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Rodman. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
All right. Dave, I might point out that I think it's 500.
Yeah, 504 is 12 times.
I was counting a few off.
104 off.
I want to know if your wife has done the impact analysis for you being home.
Well, what she's asked is what's next. And on these long winter evenings, I ask myself that question too.
don't unfortunately model until you get home.
Monday,
no, park my mind. We're the little ones
that you gave me right
now. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. They're all just okay.
Hey, everybody, have a great holiday season.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Stay safe.
You what? I say I'll see you about town.
Well, so we can see you next year.
I'll see your signs.
December 19th, we'll get that
spring.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Before you're taking the train, you are going to love it. So how long should we expect to be a six-member
bond? You know the process. It can take a while.
Just open it up.
Well, I think
like,
Robert was gone.
Tina?